Thank you for joining us for today's podcast. This is the second in a series of podcasts and accompanying blogs where we're going to be exploring how skills can drive the economic recovery in the UK. In the second podcast, we're going to build on the conversation we had in the first about the three phases of the crisis and the layers of complexity that are created by the many and varied journeys that we as individuals, as well as our organisations, are on, by starting to explore in more detail the three levels upon which skills can lead the recovery in more detail. So a very quick reminder of those three phases. They are mobilise and support, sustainable new steady states, and reinvent and return. And today we're going to talk about how a focus on skills-led recovery can help us to navigate and recover at the three different levels. So EY Talent and Henley Business School are coming together to host a programme of work to examine how increasing skills in the UK economy can help weather the storm for the economy at large, for organisations within it, and for individuals themselves. I'm Jo Adrus, EY's UK and I leader of our leadership practice, and I'm going to be moderating and hosting today's discussion. I'm delighted to be joined again by Naima Pasha. Naima is the Director of Henley Careers and Professional Development and leading at the World of Work at Henley Business School, as well as looking after staff engagement and development. We also have Bernd Vogel. Bernd is the founding director of the Henley Centre for Leadership and a professor in leadership. He's passionate about how organisations shape leadership skills that enable them to sustain energy and success in difficult scenarios. Then from EY, we have Josie Clure. Josie's a partner in People Advisory Services and leads EY's work on skills, education and learning. And we also have Frankie Close. Frankie is one of our talent consultants and spends her time helping clients understand the future of work and the emerging skills they need to focus on, as well as understanding the neuroscience that underlies many of our behaviours and actions. So a huge welcome again to all of you. It's wonderful to have you with us again. To kick off, I think I'm going to turn to you, Josie. Welcome back. So perhaps you could share some thoughts about what you would say are the starting points and the potential issues for the three levels of skills-led recovery.
Sure. Thanks, Jo. And so just to remind us of the frame, we are thinking about the recovery as recovery from an inevitable recession. So if we start at the individual level, we know that if you're finding your way into work or you're at work and want to progress, developing your skills is a critical enabler of that. So we want to explore the questions like, what are the skills of the future? How do we lead and manage in that future world? How can we become lifelong learners? How can you really turn into a self-reflective learner and learn from your day-to-day experiences? And how can you balance learning and earning? At the second level, the organisational level, we see that skills are critical here too. We know from our work with our clients that many organisations are focused on workforce planning and capability planning at the moment, not just to get back to business, but also to gain competitive advantage and a sustainable future. And of course, skills and capabilities is a critical part of that too. So if you're an organisation wanting to get ahead, you absolutely need to be thinking about your skills and capabilities. So some of the questions that we'll get into and explore include how organisations can start defining what their skills needs are, even if they can't quite define what their future is. We'll be thinking about what is a learning organisation and how do you create one? How do you make sure that you align your individual learning with your organisational requirements and making sure that when you're investing in learning, your learners get the most out of it, but also the organisation gets the best bang for its buck as well. We'll think about what the key features are in modern engaging learning, and also how organisations can really integrate their learning into day-to-day work. And then last, at the third macro level, at the economic level, we know that skills is a big driver of the economy, and skills drive productivity and productivity drives growth. So when we look at how to recover as an economy and as a society from a financial recession, we're really focused on how we can encourage organisations to upskill their people to drive that growth. So we'll be thinking about how government can incentivise workplace learning and what policies government should be thinking about when it's thinking about that issue. How can sectors target the skills improvements that they need across the sector? Perhaps which parts of the economy needs the biggest investments in skills and skills development? And last, how can skills really get the government's levelling up agenda back on track?
Thanks, Josie. That's really great to start to dive a little bit more deeply into all those three levels. I think now, Naima, I'm going to turn to you. Welcome back again. Could you start by giving us a little bit more around individuals? Could you share some of your experiences with the individuals that you are working with at the moment? You know, what are you hearing them say they're worrying about, and where are they focusing at the moment?
Of course, and thank you very much as well. So, I mean, the thing, I think the headline for this is to say, for many of us, this has been a really compressed experience. I mean, we've been, or are indeed being forced to change our ways of working in a very intense way in a short period of time. And so for many of our listeners, while we've had the privilege of being able to adapt, there is a likelihood as we start returning to work through a phased return, as we're probably predicting, but once we get to our normal place of work, we may start habituating back very quickly. And if we want to take lessons from this experience, the positive things, then we've actually got quite a short window to do that. But I also think in terms of recovery, it's a long window. For our class of 2020, and I'm talking about people who are completing undergraduate programs, masters, you know, a whole range of MBAs and things, if they're looking to get into the job market, it's more complex. It's not the same as the 2008 recession, where there might have been more opportunities to look at different types of jobs or looking at different things that they are qualified for. At the moment, this is looking quite stark, and many doors may seem to people entering the job market for the first time that many doors are closed. And I think this will continue for a period of time. So my observations on work and workplaces is that many companies will have to, because of the shift to mass introduction of digital workplaces in the home, when lockdown lifts, we will still be under some change work practices, and this will influence the culture of work. So leaders will really need to think about how something like enforced teleworking will have on social interaction, and then how that will continue to enable them to build innovative, creative workplaces, which is the thing that we want them to fuel the skills-led recovery. And if I can give an example, if we consider a sector like retail and leisure, it used to be a really big recruiter of graduates, but it's been hugely impacted by the current situation. It's still a significant area, but graduates will need to consider watching what sectors they closely to see how they change. For example, even as we progress post-COVID, we may find that a growth in a preference for online shopping more, because we feel, because of the experiences that we've had through this experience of COVID, that we feel less reluctant to travel or visit crowded places such as shops or arenas or sporting events. This will mean that the culture of retail and leisure will have changed. And so I think the skills needed to work in them will have changed as well. And that doesn't just mean having better tech skills to go in, but actually all the research that we've done shows us that better tech means often better human skills of relationship building.
Thank you, Naima. And I think, Frankie, if I could turn to you, it really strikes me that with the short window that Naima was referring to there, we've got this really unique opportunity to learn from our experiences. But for us to sort of leverage that, we're going to have to be so purposeful about how we do that. Otherwise, there's a risk that we're going to just drift back to to old habits quite quickly. Frankie, with your experience and understanding of neuroscience, could you just try to help us understand why that's the case?
Yes, sure, Jo, thanks. So as Burns mentioned on the first podcast, it's probably good to call out that everyone will have had different experiences during this time, which means that the lessons learned could be different too. If we don't take the time to consider what these are at every level, so the individual, organizational, and societal, we might get caught up in the busyness of the next big change and lose those lessons. You're right, Jo, it is like forming new habits. Generally, when we want to make a new habit long-lasting, we would have an awareness of it, so be able to name it. We would articulate the impact it's had on us, including an emotion. We would commit to changing it, and then we would monitor that change. Neuroscience research tells us that successful goal achievement is more likely if it's not only well thought out, but also appealing and motivating. Motivation is enhanced when people can connect their goal, whether individual, organizational, or societal, to their sense of self, which, as you know, is linked to our values and purpose. Another benefit to all of this reflection is that when we have an insight, we generate energy and the motivation to act, and they help us embed new wiring and sustain learning. So it's really important to take this reflection time at every level.
Thanks, Frankie. That definitely makes sense. I think let me turn to you, Bernd. Welcome back. And if we consider we may only have a short window to learn from our experiences before we run the risk of returning to old habits, but we've got this long window in terms of the impacts that are likely to be felt, how important would you say it is to move quickly, in particular for organizations that are really starting to think through how they're going to plan and navigate their recovery?
Well, pace is crucial. Let's look at the level of the organization, you know, to address skills-led recovery. The earlier organizations consider how they draw learning from shocks and disruptions, the better prepared they are. Thinking and acting long-term, I think, is about creating pace and depth now in the short term. To unleash a skills-led recovery that has stamina also means to be brave in how we help change the shape of learning. Do you harvest insights about your organizations now while you also instill lifelong learning? Does your organization consider learning to learn, as we've mentioned earlier, or whole person development, which we found as important as a future forward criteria? Or do we value the learning of specific knowledge and narrow tools in our employees and managers that work now, but really they have a short sell-by date? The former builds on skills that have value in learning to learn, and they involve, where the latter focuses on what we still today see too much of, and that since I joined the trade of education and development. To showcase what should happen, let us focus on a specific area. What can we learn about managing and leading? We see, for example, in the current situation context, that rotating leadership, what we call gig leadership in our Handel Center for Leadership Study on the Future of Work and Leadership, gig leadership has been a necessity to get successfully through the shock. Organizations can preserve this delicate, complex, you know, this shared capability and try to understand why it worked now. How can those practices, but also things like experimentation, how to create a sense of belonging and feeling at home in our now completely surprisingly virtual workplace, how can they not have currency in the future?
Bernd, in times of those massive shocks and disruptions, organizations might perhaps say that the priority is actually on survival and it's not going to be on skills-led recovery or even harvesting learning from the experience. How would you respond to those types of comments that we might start to hear?
Well, that is a tricky dilemma, and we hear these discussions. But actually, leadership is about dealing with dilemmas, as we know. So let me provide a reflection on that one. Learning and skill development now to me, is not a choice. We actually have a duty to harvest the learning at work from the shocks to organizations and actually from each individual journey we alluded to in our first blog. For instance, caused by the COVID-19 experience now, but also earlier from the financial crisis and its tremors that many still feel today, individually, in society, and as organizations. Hence, to navigate in an organization the faces of mobilize and support, sustainable new steady state, but importantly, reinvent and return now, you know, really builds a skills-led recovery. And learning really now is not optional. It is a given.
Thank you, Bernd. And Naima, I'm just going to turn to you because I think it would be really great to hear you build on what Bernd has shared with us there, because I know this is something that you've done a fair amount of research on in your future world of work role.
Yes, absolutely. What we've been doing now is talking about this immediate time frame. But yes, my research on future work skills shows that the changes ahead in the workplace are huge. I mean, we know the impact of tech, especially AI, will change many jobs and sectors. And then we have, you know, there's the influence of climate and indeed even generational difference in the workplace, not to mention attitudes. I mean, just according to a piece of research that we did in summer 29 in Henley Business School, we found when people were job hunting, 84% of people said an employer which cares about impact on society is important to them. But then when we looked at generational differences, we found that half of employees want a career that helps them make a positive impact on society. But this rises to two-thirds, at 66% of Generation Z, and that's the newest generation that are entering the workplace after university now. So in terms of skills-led recovery, we know it's we need to consider both what the needs of an employers are, but we also need to think about what people want from work and employers for the future of work.
Thank you, Naima. That's great to get that additional context. I'm just going to turn to Josie now. So Josie, we've explored more on skills-led recovery for the individual and for organisations. I'm going to turn to you to just find out a little bit more about the economy. So what would you say are going to be some of the most critical areas of focus if, in terms of learning being both incentivized in the workplace, but also how we get that understanding of what's actually going to be needed in which of the different sectors of the economy?
Yes, I think that's a really good question, Jo. So my first reflection is actually about where learning takes place. So skills policy in the UK over the last 10 years has been really focused on learning in the workplace and how we encourage employers to invest in their employees and how we can get people learning and earning at the same time. So the government's flagship policy has been around apprenticeships, and you know, I'm massively supportive of that policy and can see how it has really driven an improvement in workplace learning. I think the challenge for all of us now is that we are unfortunately going to see many more people who are not in work but who need to access learning, education and skills. I'm really interested for us to think about some of the mechanisms that government and others can put in place to help people who are out of work, many of whom will be out of work for hopefully quite a short period of time. But how can we get those people who are out of work, reskilled, upskilled, and back into the workplace as quickly as possible? And Joe, you also mentioned sectors, and I think that's a really important way of looking at the economy. So I'd suggest we need to look at the economy through two lenses, actually, so sectorally and also regionally, because when we look at specific sectors, we need to really understand not just the short term, but the long term skills requirements that that sector is going to need. And then we need to help those sectors translate that into meaningful communications with people who might want to work in that sector. So, for example, you know, obviously at the moment, lots of people are talking about the health service and whether we've got enough skills in the health service. And really, we should be pulling the skills needs together at a sectoral level, not just an organisational level, so that we can be investing in and training the skills that the whole system needs to provide the health service that we want over the next 2, 5, 10, 20 years. And then I think there's a regional dimension to all of this, which is thinking from a regional perspective, what are the skills that are going to be required to drive the economy in that region or town? And this really links to the government's levelling up agenda. So I think, you know, whether it's through mayors or whether it's through local authorities or whether it's through LEPs, there's a real need for local leaders who lead on thinking about what's our economy look like, what is our industrial strategy, and what are the skills over the short, medium and long term that we're going to need to have to power that economy. And then working with partners, education partners, whether that's universities or FE colleges or others, make sure that they are enabling people to get those skills and therefore get those jobs and therefore power the local economy.
Thank you, Josie. That was a really, really insightful look at some of the things that we're going to need to be thinking about from the economy perspective. I think maybe just to round this podcast off, Frankie, if I could just turn to you. Have you got some sort of final thoughts that you might be able to share on how we can focus our behaviours to really leverage the recent experiences and learnings that we've been going through?
Yes, sure. So all of these changes rely on us recognising that this is a mindset and not just a timescale. As we know, behaviour change doesn't happen overnight. So as organisations increasingly define what they want their future working world to look like, they need to take real steps to reinforce and embed desired practices and behaviours.
So thank you all so much for our conversation today. It's been really wonderful to speak to all of you again and explore those three levels of skills-led recovery in more detail at the individual, the organisational and the economy levels. What I'm hearing is for the individual, it's so important to understand the skills that are going to support us in the future and really think about how we can focus on becoming lifelong learners. And for the organization, it's so important to understand how to bring employees back to work safely and start them on that journey to develop the additional skills needed to become that very competitive learning organization. And also finding ways to integrate that learning into work in an engaging and inspiring way. And then for the economy to understand the skills that are going to drive our productivity across sectors and regions, and doing that because we absolutely recognize that productivity drives growth and recovery. And I think probably the final observation or sort of takeaway from me was, Bernd, when you were saying that skills-led recovery and learning is not optional. It absolutely is a given for us to be able to come through what we know is going to be a recession ahead. So thank you all very much for joining the conversation today. Just as a final point to wrap up, I'd also like to point our listeners to the accompanying blog that's been posted on LinkedIn introducing the topic of skills-led recovery. So Josie and Naima have co-authored that blog, and it's a really helpful accompaniment to the conversation that we've been having here today and that we'd had on the previous podcast, the first in the series. So thank you all for listening, and we hope to talk to you again soon. Thank you.